Hey there, thanks for listening to the Wednesday Conversation. I'm Mike Kresnick, and I'm here with Pastor Bob Thune and Pastor Dusty White and Chris Hemmelman of Coram Deo Church. Every Wednesday, we sit down to talk about how the gospel of Jesus Christ connects to the questions and issues of everyday life. And today, we're continuing our series on the seven deadly sins. And we're talking about greed.
Greed. Here's the old school word for it, avarice. So if you ever read old writers and they speak of avarice, they're talking about the sin of greed. St. Paul calls it the root of all evil, the love of money. So let me paint some broad contours, fellas, just to get the conversation started, and then we'll color them in more detail. I'm borrowing again from Peter Kraft today, his book, Back to Virtue, where he talks about the seven deadly sins and contrast them with, he says that the Beatitudes are Jesus' answers to the seven deadly sins, which is an interesting way of reading the Beatitudes. But here's what Crave says, that our temptation toward greed is not about having money, but rather that money has sort of an umbrella principle, meaning it can get us a lot of things. It can get us security. It can get us comfort. It can get us a feeling of being protected, provided for. And so Crave says really what that does is it apes or mimics divine self-sufficiency. So God's the only being in the universe who actually is self-sufficient. And in our temptation to be like God, we have the desire to feel as though we are self-sufficient. And so at the root of greed is that desire, that longing to be self-sufficient, to be able to insulate ourselves against all risk, against all vulnerability, and against anything that might threaten us. And I think this is part of why when Jesus teaches us how to pray, he prays, "Give us this day our daily bread." If you think about that petition of the Lord's Prayer, it's really saying, "Give me what I need for today." And therefore, in longing for just what I need for today, I'm allowing God to be God and making myself submissive to Him rather than trying to imitate His self-sufficiency. The problem, as we've been talking about in all of these sins, is the immoderate desire for things. So think about it this way. It's not a sin to want to have things as means. So for instance, I want a house as a means for providing my children a place to grow up and practicing hospitality and providing shelter. Those are all good things. So it's not wrong to want things as means to be used for the good of human beings and the glory of God. But when they become ends in themselves, right, which is exactly what you see in a materialistic culture, is that things become ends in themselves. And so houses and cars and bank accounts and retirement funds and jobs and these things all become status symbols and essentially ends in themselves instead of means to an end. And that's the beginnings of going down the road into the sin of greed.
Bob, what would you say are some of the opposites of greed? Or what would Peter say even?
The opposites would be contentment and generosity, being content with what we have and then freely giving to others. Both of those things loosen our grip on greed, which is why I think if you think about how the New Testament urges us to cultivate virtue, right, it's number one, finding all of our good in God so that it begins to loosen our grip on what we have, and then cultivating the virtues of contentment and of generosity. And so, in a sense, the spiritual discipline of giving, of tithing, and the practicing of contentment are two ways that we begin to work our hearts in a different direction from greed and actually to sort of soften the grip that greed can have on our hearts. It's really interesting to think about. There's interesting connections just to society here. One of the things that Peter Kraft points out is that our economic system is based on artificial wealth rather than natural wealth. So think about this. In previous societies and sort of more simple societies, your wealth was what you actually had. I have a house, I have some land, I have some animals, I own some livestock. It was actual tangible wealth, right? And so when we read about Abraham, it tells us he was wealthy by telling us about how many flocks and herds he had. And we read about Solomon, it tells us he was wealthy by telling us how many people he provided for at the king's table, those kinds of things. In our society, money is an artificial form of wealth. In other words, it's not actually anything tangible. It's just something artificial that gives me the means of getting tangible things if I so desired. And so what Crafe says is an economy that's built on artificial wealth has an infinite capacity for greed, because natural wealth is finite, meaning it doesn't do me any good to have more livestock than I can feed my family with or sell to others and, you know, and provide for them with. It's natural wealth is finite. I can only use so much food and so much land and so many houses. And artificial wealth is infinite, because I can always have another investment property and another dollar in my 401k. And it just it actually creates this sort of momentum toward greed because of the way our economic system works, which I think is fascinating. And again, if you think about the teaching of Timothy there, if we have food and clothing, with these we will be content. Those are very tangible material things. Give us this day our daily bread, very tangible material things. And so as soon as we start to get animated by artificial wealth and I need more sort of opportunities to invest, I need more cars, I need more toys, these things start to become things that push us down the road of cultivating greed.
So I think this is the interesting thing in our culture, that because we are affluent in so many ways, that there is access to things that might not immediately seem like we're being greedy, but in one sense, to kind of keep up with the status quo or keep up with the Joneses, as it's often said, we have to have certain things. And so something as simple as this, to me, this has always been an interesting thought, of something like cable TV or a luxury like owning a car, or, you know, things that we would look at as in some ways even basic things that people have. But if you start to stack on top all of these quote unquote luxuries, things that are nice to have, and how people pursue these things, what is interesting is, where is the line between just simply having things and simply and going after things for the sake of I have to have a certain status? And so whether you are rich or poor, whether you have a lot of things or maybe just a few, this line gets blurred because we have such access. I mean, you could be living on welfare and still have dish TV. You could be living in welfare and still have a lot of things that people that aren't don't necessarily have. And so how you even draw this line within socioeconomic status is fuzzy to me. And so I guess, again, with the economy that Peter Kreef's talking about just creates blurry lines to me that I think are in some ways make it difficult to pin this down within, I don't know, within my own heart or talking with other people as well.
It's always funny when we do financial counseling with people, the things that they consider necessities. You know, you're starting to look at, yeah, I got to have my Dish Network TV because, you know, I got to have the all sports package. No, you can do without that. You don't need that to survive. But we do have a funny way of making wants into needs.
Here's some stats for you. These are about a year old, but they come to mind. 1.1 billion people live on $1 a day. The global median income is $1,225 a year. And those living at the U.S. poverty line, so I realize this is just U.S.-based, but those living at the U.S. poverty line, $11,400 per individual or $23,500 per family are in the top 14% of the global income distribution. And then this one's pretty staggering. If you're a single person making more than $34,000 a year, you're in the richest 1% of people in the whole world. So we have all kinds of greed, Chris, to your point, just right at our fingertips all the time.
Yeah, so if I make $40,000 a year, this is another interesting question to me. So you read those statistics, and I think they bring a lot of global perspective. So if I make, you know, $40,000 a year, and I'm able to provide and have certain things within reason, I think there's also the flip side is you can also start to feel guilty about certain things. And I don't necessarily know if that's a helpful way to address this issue of, like, you know, well, look at, yeah, I'm blessed. And yeah, I may be able to have internet or cable or drive a fairly nice car. But so when I'm discerning greed in my own heart, is it a matter of just the stuff I possess?
Or does it get at a deeper level of why I possess those things or what I'm using those things for? Because you could start laying a lot of guilt on somebody that makes a lot of money, has a lot of things. I mean, when Mindy and I were living in D.C., there's a lot of money in D.C. It's ridiculous. And we knew a lot of wealthy people. But some of the most wealthy people that I've ever met are the least greedy that I've ever met. And so even in how we confront this issue, just on a purely goods base, like I have X, Y, Z, is problematic in some ways for me because I don't necessarily always see the connection with the more stuff I have, the more greedy I am. In some ways, it's I have these things, but yet I give a crap load away to – can I say crap on a podcast?
Yeah.
I give a lot away. I bless people. I'm super generous. And so, again, I don't necessarily know if I'm making a distinct point other than the fact that I think in our society, how we tease this out is not always clear to me.
Well, and Jesus doesn't evaluate greed that way, right? Jesus does not use a material or a prosperity measure for greed. In fact, if you look at the book of Luke, the Gospel of Luke, you see a lot of focus on both the poor and the rich. So you see Jesus merciful to the poor, but you also see Jesus loving and welcoming the rich and people like Zacchaeus, who is a wealthy tax collector and yet humbles himself, and he's a model of seeking the Lord. So it's interesting that I think you're right on, Chris, and the measure, biblically speaking, is less about what I have and don't have and more about the posture and disposition of my heart. And here's a couple metaphors. Clutching versus releasing, tight-fisted versus open-handed. Those are and anxiety and control versus joy and freedom. To the extent that I feel a need to control, measure, like if you read the Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens, Scrooge is always counting his money. That's like one of the ways he portrays the greediness of Ebenezer Scrooge is that he owns a counting house, and a lot of what he does is he counts his money and he's accounting for every penny. And so that sense of anxiety or control over my wealth versus a free and open spirit, a thankfulness to God for what I have, and a willingness to give, be generous. Those things seem to be core to evaluating where is greed present in me. It's interesting to me also to ask the question: what are the heart idols underneath this? And it seems like I can trace three of them real easily: comfort, security, and power. So if you think about what does money give us, it gives me comfort, the ability to create a comfortable life for myself. It gives me security, the ability to feel like I'm not vulnerable and at risk. And power, it gives me the power over other people or power over unforeseen circumstances. Now, none of those things is wrong in and of themselves, right? Like I don't want to be at risk. I don't want my kids to wonder where their next meal is coming from. I want there to be a measure of security in their lives. I don't want them to be powerless. I want there to be a sense of opportunity in their lives. So none of those things is wrong in and of themselves, but those heart idols, the longing for those things, the loving of those things more than I love God, is a driver for the sin of greed.
So how do I know if I have a good desire that's healthy versus a greedy desire that's verging on one of those idols? So let's just tease out an example, maybe. 'Cause wisdom would also say I should be providing, I should be making sure that my family's provided for and secure and stable and right. So I don't want to be foolish there. So how do I know just in my heart where that line is?
One possible measure, Dusty, there's a lot of nuance to your question, and I don't know that there's a clean answer for every single person, but one nuance is the level of thankfulness and gratitude that's in my heart. So if I feel a sense of, Psalm 24, the earth is the Lord and everything in it, and so that sense that everything I have belongs to God, it's a gift from God, I'm open, I'm thankful for it, I'm thankful for the ability to provide certain means of security and comfort for my family, but I'm also seeing those as gifts of God and grateful and thankful to Him for the provision of those things. They drive me to worship. That's good. To the extent that I begin to see those things as mine to provide, mine to, there's pressure upon me to maintain that, to provide that, to hold on to that. When I begin to feel that sort of those tentacles of control or anxiety, that begins to reveal to me, at least, that I'm clutching, I'm grabbing, I'm holding, I'm feeling like I'm not living with a sense of thankfulness to God, but rather with a sense of pressure that I'm the one providing these things, and therefore they're exercising a grip in my soul that they're not intended to.
Yeah, I'd add to that too, the sense of identity. If you begin to lose the things, do you lose your sense of self-worth and identity so that you feel like I have to guard that, because if I don't guard that, then people are going to think differently of me. They're going to think less of me. I'm going to lose status, lose face, and the anxiety and pressure that brings as well.
I think there's also a very tangible, practical thing here of we always talk about tithing as a spiritual discipline. Like, the giving away of money is a great way to kill greed. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so we can't, like, the danger in all of our idolatry conversation is that it becomes very sort of internal and introverted and introspective, when in reality, how Jesus seems to talk about generosity is, don't let your left hand know what your right hand is doing. Give, you know, give freely to the poor. You know, give away what you have. Be generous. And so this idea of tithing, giving money to the Lord, the idea of giving to the poor, the idea of giving away resources that I have liberally and generously, if I can't do that, if that always feels stressful to me or always feels anxious to me, or I'm always counting nickels and dimes to see if I can do that, that's probably a sign that that greed's more present in my heart than I wish it were.
And I think with that too, the side of encouraging Christians, if you're gifted at making money, if you're gifted at production and building a business and sort of that wealth generation, I think if we're not careful, we can, in some ways, we can discourage people who are gifted in that way, and it could be a blessing to the kingdom and to the church from doing that. And so if there is this encouragement, yeah, do that. But there's incredible joy and opportunity for the kingdom if you're giving these things away. And so even celebrating that giving away of resources and just how God blesses and God uses people within the church, they're gifted in that way and He's blessed with resources. I think you can combat greed in celebration, as you were saying.
Here's another interesting nuance from Kraft. He says that in a capitalist society, we tend to think of giving as a means to receiving. Mm-hmm. And so if you think about evangelists that talk about sowing a seed, you know, like the television evangelists, the prosperity gospel people, well, all they're doing is appealing to greed. They're saying, you sow this financially, God will give you more. That's a blanket, brash appeal to greed, baseline. He says, Jesus teaches the opposite, that the best thing about getting riches is it enables you to practice generosity. And so a Christian perspective is, I actually want to create wealth and I want to ask God to give me resources because it enables me to give it away. So getting is a means to giving rather than giving being a means to getting.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
And I think we can think about tithing that way. There's a lot of people that think about, I should tithe because God will honor me if I do, instead of God's given me and therefore because of what I've gotten from Him, I want to give away.
That's a good question right there. So why do you even give? I mean, that just taps into all kinds of things that go further down to this greed idea. Contentment and generosity. Contentment, so even as we're having this conversation, I'm just reflecting personally, and contentment is one of the things that I'm always trying to catch myself towards when it comes to addressing greed. But this whole idea of generosity is probably my weaker link. When personally, just when it comes down to the sin of greed, I always want to make sure that I'm trying to be content, trying to make sure that everything's secure at home, and then maybe I'll give more away, you know, rather than just seeing it as like, man, the Lord's provided for me, and so who can I bless, and who can I be generous to, and who needs money right now, or not just money, but things and a place, and so this conversation is convicting.
Yeah, here's another angle on this. we tend to think about giving and generosity as, well, I'll do that if I have extra, right? Like if I have the resources to give, then I'll give. But I don't have the resources to do that, so I'm not going to do that. And I think one of the most helpful practices here is to give in ways that actually hurt, where you actually feel it of like, I got to go without something that I would not prefer to go without. That's the mark of a truly generous heart is not, oh, I've got some extra anyway, so I'll just give it away. That's also generous. But even more profoundly generous is the I'm giving, even though I'm not sure that I should be giving, you know, or even though it begins to crimp my preferences and I got to go without a little bit. And so that's I saw my parents do that growing up. We always had crappy old cars because my parents just gave a lot. And so they it's not that we didn't have the money to drive nicer cars. It's like they just said, you know what, it's not something like we're going to sort of discipline ourselves to drive older vehicles because it's a means of allowing us to give more. And so that was transformative for me to see like, okay, it's not that they can't afford to get a better car. It's they actually are making a sacrifice here in a way that we feel in order to be more generous toward others. Mm-hmm.
Interesting. While you're talking about that, I was thinking about the gospel and how it's not like God had five sons and then decided the one he didn't like, he would pick and put that son on the cross. He gave his one and only son. And so just in thinking about generosity and how much that cost, you know, and the pain associated with that and the grief associated with that and turning his back on that, all of that is what I was thinking about while you're talking about that.
The other thing I think that's helpful is thankfulness and gratitude. That helps with the contentment side. So seeing that aspect of the gospel you just mentioned, Chris, helps with the generosity side. I think that thankfulness helps with the contentment side. So I think about when I feel discontentment, what I want to do to combat that is to just start thanking God for what he's given me, you know? And I've had a long history of crummy cars. I have a decent car now, but there's always a thing for me that's like, I always want a better car, or a newer car, or a different car than I have. And so there's this practice for me of when I start to feel that, just thanking God they have a car, like that I can get from point A to point B, and that I have money to put gas in it. Like just realizing actually what I have here is better than what much of the world has, and I don't deserve it, and it's a gift of God's grace. And so I just start to sort of thank God for it. God, thanks that I have what I have. Thanks that this car runs, you know. And that's a great means of cultivating contentment, which is the interesting thing about both generosity and contentment is they have to be cultivated. We have to live into these things. They're not automatically just going to show up if we spend more time in prayer, but they're virtues that we cultivate, that we discipline ourselves toward out of our understanding of the gospel that then begin to crush and cut away at the roots of greed in our hearts.
Yeah, and to add to that thought, when the gospel is spoken about the riches of God, it's this abundance, this outflowing, like God has given us all the riches in the gospel. So it's we have a God that is, he's not stingy, he doesn't hold back, he has given us out of the abundance, he has given us all things in Christ. And so just that thought, I mean, that should kill greed and spur generosity if we really let that soak about how much God has lavished. I mean, just the language of Scripture is just this lavishing, abundance, pouring out. It's God is not stingy. And if that's the God that we serve, and if that's who we're trusting in, to kind of go back to your point of what Peter Kreef talks about, of that greed, the root of greed and this of not trusting in God or this control issue. But if we really see our God as generously blessing us abundantly in Christ, and that's who we're trusting in, man, I hope that would stir all of us to live in the joy of giving generously and then watching greed just be choked out in the church.
The goal of this podcast is to equip our own church for discipleship and mission. So if you're a Christian or a church leader in another context, we thank you for listening in, and we pray that the things that we've talked about might also be helpful to you as you minister in your own context. Please join the conversation by tweeting us at @CoramDeoOmaha. And we'll talk to you again next Wednesday on the Wednesday Conversation.
We're live, baby. Let's get live with the kid sensation.
Get content in the same pants you got greedy in, Krezzy.
I don't know what that means.
I won't talk about your pants.